Keep up to date with the past on the 100 Years Ago Show with Mark Stein.
Guns in Parliament, toxins in the Highlands, and death on a picture shoot. It's August 1922.
100 years from today.
World News Update. Ireland is in the middle of a civil war, just 4 months away from the inauguration of the new Irish Free State. And now a key player in the provisional government of that new state is dead. Arthur Griffith was the founder of Sinn Féin and the lead Irish negotiator at the talks in London that led to a compromise on Dominion status for Ireland. He had been working very hard preparing for the government of the new state, despite checking into St. Vincent's nursing home with tonsillitis just a few days ago. About to leave for his office, he stopped to retie his shoelace and fell down unconscious. Mr. Griffith is dead at 51.
All that out of Ireland left their happy feelings flow, like the old river channels flowing free.
The cork is well and truly out. The Irish Republican Army have seized the town of Dundalk, but Free State troops have landed 4 ships carrying 1,500 troops on the west coast of Ireland to take back Cork, Youghal and Bantry from the Republicans. The Free State has encountered resistance only at Bantry, but in their retreat, the Republicans set fire both to Cork and Queenstown. They're torching a lot. Mitchelstown Castle was the largest neo-Gothic property in Ireland, but 2 months after seizing it, evicting the owners and snaffling the Gainsboroughs and other valuable items, the Irish Republican Army have burnt it to the ground. In London, despite pleas for clemency from George Bernard Shaw and other prominent figures, two IRA terrorists, Joseph O'Sullivan and Reginald Dunn, have been hanged at Wandsworth Jail for the murder in June of Field Marshal Sir Henry Wilson. In Germany, over a year-long period around the end of the war, 3 women and 2 men were murdered. Now a farmhand in Oelgem in the Rhineland Palatinate has been arrested for the crimes. Johann Mayer is known to one and all as Stumpf Arm due to a missing forearm lost in a quarry accident. It did not apparently impede his killing spree. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues. Germany and the United States have signed a treaty that provides for the establishment of a joint American-German commission to decide the amount of reparations to be paid by the Berlin government to Washington. The agreement supplements the US-German peace treaty agreed last year.
Morning, every evening, ain't we got fun? Not much money, oh, but money.
On the other hand, is there any money to collect? Britain proposed the 2/3 cut in Germany's payments at the London Reparations Conference, but the entire meeting has broken up without agreement, and Germany has defaulted on its latest reparations payment, saying in a note that due to demand for foreign currency to pay for basic necessities and cover hyperinflation, it cannot afford to pay. In Bolshevik Russia, 14 people have been condemned to death for conspiring against the government. 11 of them were not present to hear the sentence, having been expelled from the courtroom for refusing to stand for the judges. It is not clear whether the executions will be carried out. Lively scenes in the Italian Chamber of Deputies during a debate on the recent general strike. A communist member said it had failed because the proletariat had been insufficiently armed. At this, many fascist deputies rose and began shaking their fists at their parliamentary colleagues. One of the fascists, Francesco Giunta, then pulled out a revolver and waved it in the general direction of the communists. The session was then suspended and the galleries ordered cleared, although the general yelling and gesticulating and revolver waving continued for another half hour. Elsewhere in, well, not Italy, but that general neck of the woods, the most serene Republic of San Marino is a micronation entirely surrounded by northwestern Italy. However, it is not immune to the political currents coursing through the great powers of the world. Giuliano Gozzi, the Secretary of Foreign Affairs and de facto leader of San Marino, has just announced the establishment of the San Marino Fascist Party. His Majesty's government in London has designated Hebrew, Arabic, and English as the official languages of the new Mandate of Palestine. Just weeks after the lethal huckleberry pie served in Manhattan, we have more corpses to add to the ranks of those dead from dining. At the Loch Maree Resort in the Northwest Highlands of Scotland, 48 people, mostly sports fishermen and their gillies, sat down to dinner. Two died the following day, and another six have died since. No murderer this time, just the potted duck paste that the Loch Maree Hotel cans itself and serves to its patrons as a local delicacy. It is believed to be the first case in the British Isles of what is known as botulism. In the United States, President Warren Harding's attempt to mediate the six-week-old railroad strike has ended in failure. The leaders of the striking labor unions have unanimously rejected his plan to have the question of seniority referred for arbitration by the Railroad Labor Board. The center of the United States is, no, not the capital, but the geographic center. The U.S. Coast and Geodetic Survey has proclaimed it to be at 39 degrees 50 north and 98 degrees 35 east, a location in Smith County, Kansas, about 2.5 miles from the town of Lebanon. Somewhat northwest of that geographic center, in Yellowstone National Park, the semi-centennial geyser got its name 5 months ago to mark the half century since Yellowstone was designated as America's first national park. The geyser is north of Roaring Mountain in Wyoming, 23 miles from the more famous Old Faithful, and has belatedly decided to mark that semi-centennial by erupting in spectacular gusher, sending columns of water up to 300 feet high and scattering debris and rocks as far away as another 300 feet.
Take me out to the ballgame, take me out with the crowd. Oh, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back.
Take him out of the ball game, big time. In sports news, Shufflin' Phil Douglas has been shuffled off. A tremendous baseball pitcher who helped his New York Giants win last year's World Series. This year, Shufflin' Phil was leading with the best earned run average of all time, 2.63. But apparently while intoxicated, he wrote a letter to Les Mann of the St. Louis Cardinals offering to quit the Giants and let the Cardinals take the pennant. Quote, I want some inducement. I don't want this guy to win the pennant, and I feel if I stay here, I will win it for him. If you want to send a man over here with the goods, I will leave for home on the next train. I will go down to fishing camp and stay there. The letter found its way to baseball commissioner Kennesaw Mountain Landis. Instead of getting the goods, Shufflin' Phil Douglas has been banned from baseball for life.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I'll show you around. You love it, bet your bottom dollar, you lose the blues in Chicago. Chicago, the town that Billy Sunday could not shut down. That great beach and the lake. I know a girl lost her shoes in a stake in Chicago, Chicago, my hometown.
On the south side of Chicago, ground has been broken on the construction of one of the most expensive sports facilities ever to be built in America. It is estimated to cost at least 10 times the $1 million budget of the Memorial Coliseum currently under construction in Los Angeles. Second Lieutenant Westside T. Larson of the 60th Service Squadron at Kelly Field in Texas has flown the 1,100 miles from San Antonio to San Diego in what is believed to be a record time for that route, 10 and a half hours, or faster than 100 miles per hour. Rio Nights. We are only a month away from the International Exposition in Rio de Janeiro to mark the centenary of Brazilian independence. To accommodate the glittering personalities who will be attending the exposition and enjoying those Rio Nights, the entrepreneur Rocha Miranda has opened the lavish Hotel Gloria. Book now because it has only 180 rooms. Not because the hotel is small, but because so much space is needed for its theatre, its casino, and its multiple ballrooms. Every one of those rooms, though, has a bathroom and a telephone. And the Hotel Gloria is the first building in South America with a reinforced concrete structure erected under the direct supervision of German engineers. If you want picture acting, you go to the pictures. If you want to see chaps walking around talking dialogue, you go to a theatre. We all know that, but there are some fellows who seem to think the future lies in pictures with talking. The tireless inventor Lee DeForest has now given members of the press the first demonstration of his new process for synchronized sight and sound. He calls it phonofilm. Do you like those exciting picture scenes in which a man is standing on the girder of a skyscraper 1,000 feet up in the air? 20 years ago, motion pictures were still so new that a producer could procure no end of members of the public willing to do such things for free. In recent years, however, they have become the province of professional persons. Pearl White, whom we all love for The Perils of Pauline, became famous in that serial for doing her own stunt and occasionally injuring herself in the performance thereof. But Pathé eventually decided they could not risk such a valuable star. And so in the last year or so, Miss White has used what is known as a stunt double, usually a stunt man wearing a lady's wig. One such was John Stevenson, who had been signed to double for Pearl White in the forthcoming picture serial Plunder. He was on location at 72nd Street and Columbus Avenue in New York, attempting to jump from the top of a moving bus to a girder. He almost made it, but he struck his head on the girder, fell to the ground, and died of a fractured skull. Umberto Valenti came from Sicily and made it big in New York as a hitman for the D'Aquila crime family. His kills included the Morello gang leader, Vincenzo Terranova. That's impressive, but it can also attract attention. Following a failed assassination attempt, a rival mob boss, Joe Masseria, lured Mr. Valenti to a cafe at the corner of East 12th Street and 2nd Avenue, where he was shot. Fleeing the cafe, Valenti leapt onto the running board of a passing taxi before falling to the street mortally wounded. Umberto Valenti was 30. Do you know the Pilgrim's Chorus from Tannhäuser? This is an arrangement by Louis Kemenick. He was born in Germany but came to the United States at the age of 23 and made a tremendous name for himself as both a composer and conductor, wielding the baton of the New York Philharmonic Orchestra, the Mendelssohn Glee Club, the Brooklyn Choral Union, and many more. Mr. Kemenick has taken his own life with the cooking gas from the stove at his apartment on West 91st Street in Manhattan. He was 55. Crosby Butler was an archaeologist of such eminence that the government of the Ottoman Empire asked him to supervise the excavations at Sardis in Turkey. A signal honor for a Christian and an American, Mr. Butler's work uncovered a temple to Artemis and over 1,000 tombs from the city's time as capital of the ancient kingdom of Lydia. The work was interrupted by the war but had recently resumed. Mr. Butler was returning from Sardis via Italy and France when he was taken ill. He died at the American Hospital of Paris, aged 50. Viscount Northcliffe was born plain old Alfred Harmsworth in Dublin and in 1896 founded the Daily Mail. It was dismissed by the Prime Minister, the Marquess of Salisbury, as written for office boys by office boys, but it quickly became the biggest selling newspaper in the world. According to his fellow press magnate, Lord Beaverbrook, Lord Northcliffe was, quote, the greatest figure who ever strode down Fleet Street, and through his ownership of not only the Mail but also the Daily Mirror, he became a man of huge influence on British politics and popular opinion. Last year, he contracted a streptococcal infection and his health deteriorated, although many thought he had simply gone insane. Viscount Northcliffe is dead at 57, and his viscountcy, barony, and baronetcy die with him. He has left 3 months' pay to each of his 6,000 employees. Levy Mayer was an American attorney, a child prodigy who had graduated from Yale Law School before he was even old enough to practice law in his home state. He would become one of the wealthiest men of his time through the practice of law. Mr. Mayer successfully defended the Iroquois Theater after the worst ever theater disaster in America, resulting in the deaths of over 600 people. He defended Charles Comiskey in the Black Sox scandal and represented many distillers in an ultimately unsuccessful fight against the 18th Amendment. He grew very rich defending major corporations in antitrust suits. Levy Mayer is dead at 63 and leaves an estate estimated at $25 million just from being a lawyer. In the American Civil War, U.S. Army Captain Charles Clawson was in the thick of it at the Battle of Spotsylvania Courthouse in Virginia. Although severely wounded and under terrific fire, he continued to lead his regiment against the enemy and prevented the capture of the battery. For his bravery, he was awarded the Medal of Honor. Charles Clawson is dead at 79. James Gordon was a black soldier in the West India Regiment who in 1892 found himself serving in the Second Gambia Campaign about 80 miles inland from Bathurst. About a dozen men were attempting to take a place called Tonyataba by breaking down the south gate to the town. Suddenly, a number of musket muzzles were projected through a cunningly masked row of loopholes pointed at the back of the oblivious Major G.O. Madden, crying, "Look out, sir! Lance Corporal Gordon threw himself between the major and the muskets, shoving him out of the way and himself taking a couple of shots through the lungs. By his bravery and his swift action, Lance Corporal Gordon saved his commanding officer's life and was awarded the Victoria Cross, only the second man of the West Indies to be so decorated, after Private Samuel Hodge, also first service in the Gambia in 1866. Lance Corporal Gordon recovered from his wounds, and as Sergeant Gordon was one of the West Indies attending Queen Victoria upon her Diamond Jubilee in 1897. William James Gordon is dead of a stroke in Kingston, Jamaica, at the age of 59. And that's the way of the world, August 1922.
100 years from today, 100 years from today.
The 100 Years Ago Show is a production of Markstein Enterprises and O'Kill Media. All rights reserved.